Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yes, at the time of the morning, where we join our very own Adam Kamda, back from his trip from North Africa, from Egypt. And I know Adam was having a mashallah time. I assumed that you had dad with you. You were in the Red Sea, you looked at the Nile, and you looked at the tiny, they didn't have chambu, the chambu fish like Lake Malawi. I think in Egypt, they have a bigger fish than the chambus. Adam Kamda, Harlan Wasalan, welcome back home. Really great to have you. The Indian Ocean was crying, Adam, where art thou? But you are back, and I'm happy to have you back, Adam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful morning, Adam?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafad. Yes, a lovely morning on the Durban beachfront. It's really awesome to be back. We had 40 to 48 degrees weather there. It's like as if you are in a hairdryer on full blast and full heat, Shafad. It's really hot and dehydrating. So it's great to appreciate our Durban cool winter. Although we're expecting some strong winds and big seas this weekend, Shafad. There's a cold front approaching us. And apparently there's another cold front behind that. We'll leave a dusting of snow on most of the high-lying areas, and I believe it is already snowing in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape. And later today, they're expecting snow in the Drakensberg as well, Shafad.
Well, Adam, you know, I'm not going to let you just give us a diversion about Eastern Cape and Drakensberg. Let's talk about your trip, you know, where you took off from, Durban, got into a direct flight. Did you fly directly to Egypt? And, you know, tell us, what were some of the highlights of your trip, besides the blow dryer and the air dryer you went through? But tell us, you know, maybe you're a very observant guy, about the Red Sea and maybe something about fishing in Egypt, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, it was a last minute trip. We actually flew over to celebrate my dad's birthday. It was his birthday on the 17th of July. I wish I could have fished in each of those destinations. Egypt, we went to Cairo, we went to Sharm el Sheikh, and wanted to fish in Dubai as well. But in Egypt, in Cairo, we did quite a few cruises on the River Nile, and water conditions weren't quite favorable for fishing, with lots of hyacinth floating around and fast-flowing water. Also, I think you need a special permit as well to fish in the Nile. I was hoping to target Nile perch. But as I said, it was a last-minute trip, so I couldn't make all those perfect preparations for fishing. But nevertheless, enjoyed being on the water, amazing sights and sounds of Cairo, the River Nile. We did a tour of the pyramids and the Sphinx in a horse and cart. That was quite fun. Lovely food on the floating restaurants on the River Nile as well, Shafad. But the highlight of the trip was 5 days in Sharm el Sheikh, which is also on the Red Sea, and absolutely amazing diving and snorkeling around Sharm el Sheikh. In Sharm el Sheikh, fishing is completely prohibited. So they even looked at me suspiciously when they saw the fishing tackle in the x-rays going through the security in the airport, Shafad. They wanted me to open the bags and let's see what's inside there. And they reminded me that fishing is not allowed. I said, no, it's okay. I wouldn't unpack that tackle. So the snorkeling was so great, Shafad. You know, I regretted not having a waterproof camera with me. Having said that, I had to improvise, and I saw some other divers had waterproof pouches for their cell phones. So I went out to one of the shops in our resort and managed to get myself a pouch. And thank God my phone survived the trip. I managed to film some amazing footage. I was diving daily, an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening, at the coolest parts of the day, Shafad. And this resort had an amazing pier, a floating pier that would go off from the shore. It runs for about 100 meters out to sea. And then the depth of the reef is just like a meter below the surface of the water until the end of the pier, where it drops off to about 20 meters deep, Shafad. And at that spot, on the different days, I spotted such amazing sea life. I spotted a great barracuda, which I followed for a while and filmed. I spotted blue-spotted ribbon-tailed stingray, which I filmed for about a minute and a half, followed it around the reef, and dozens of other reef fish, Shafad. There was so much to see. Then when we went to Dubai, Shafad, there is opportunity to fish in Dubai. But the humidity was too high and really was too hot. And we decided to give it a skip for the cooler months. They say the fishing improves in Dubai around September. So inshallah, if I get to travel that way again, I'll definitely do a fishing trip in Dubai.
You know what I was thinking of, Adam, when you're talking about the beautiful reef there and you follow the barracuda. Are there any sharks in that area?
Yes, our guide said there is the one black shark, which is very dangerous, and everyone picked up their ears to listen to what he has to say. And then he pointed to himself. He says, "I am the biggest shark in this ocean." Yes, Shafat, there definitely are sharks, but there hasn't been any incidents, and generally they don't interfere with divers. There's so much of fish life out there for them to eat. I don't think there really is much risk. And where we snorkel and dive along the shores, it's pretty much protected waters. There's no shark net as such. And you know what? The fish are not afraid of humans as well. Because you're not allowed to fish there, they've gotten so accustomed to humans being in the water and not being a threat that they swim right up to you. And it's really quite an experience to dive in those waters. And when you return, Shafad, you know, we have our local anglers always complaining about bag limits and size limits. Why are we only allowed to catch 4 shad a day, and minimum size must be 30 centimeters? But you must appreciate that at least we are allowed to fish here. Now, in a place like Sharm el Sheikh, fishing is completely forbidden, Shafad.
Alhamdulillah, you know, great stories coming from you, Adam. And I tell you, Boniface is intrigued. I'm sure all the listeners are listening to you very closely and very intently. The Egyptians, you know, Alexandra and all that, they well known for fishing, isn't it? What type of fish is popular with the population there?
Yes, Shafad, on the cruises, they did provide us with fish. There was one fish that tasted like similar to our mullet, which was bride. And there was one fish that tasted similar to our sugar mackerel or bonito or tuna species, Shafad. But the fish that generally are targeted in Egypt are the Nile perch, which grows to be amongst the biggest freshwater fish on earth. So it really is quite a spectacular fishing trip. I think a lot of people go to the Aswan Dam to target these fish. They are targeted on the River Nile in certain parts of Egypt as well. Those fishing opportunities were quite far from Cairo, where we were based. I think it's probably like half a day or a full day's drive to get to those destinations. So if you are planning fishing in Egypt, it takes a lot of preparation, forethought, a lot of planning, arranging all the paperwork, and arranging with the charter companies, to make this trip possible, Shafad.
Now, Adam, looking at the history of Egypt, you know, when you read the Quran, there's so much of Musa alayhi salam, Yusuf alayhi salam, all going to Egypt. And, you know, Egypt, I mean, I'm saying Egypt because all these Egyptian friends that I have here, they don't say Egypt. They say, Ya Hishabad, Misri, Egypt. So I'm just saying it like them. So they, you know, they're listening to you. But when you look at all these, what type of, I mean, with your dad being with you, when you're talking about, hey, Musa alayhi salam split the Red Sea, or, you know, he split the Nile or Red Sea and so forth, what went through your mind, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, Egypt is full of history and full of mystery. When you tour the pyramids, you know, it's really awe-inspiring to see these pyramids had been constructed thousands of years ago with huge stone blocks. Even by today's standards, it would take quite a lot of cranes and a lot of engineering intelligence to put these together. And apparently they are aligned with certain stars, and they have a lot of astronomical significance. So the Egyptian race was quite advanced, in terms of construction, engineering, astronomy, and there's lots of stories and lots of history recorded on the walls of all these tombs, the pyramids, the temples, all written in hieroglyphics. And there's a lot, you'd see a lot of pictures of boats on the River Nile and lots of fish around and hunting and fishing murals as well, Shafad. So they were pretty much, outdoors people. And also the stories they talk about is in the afterlife as well. And how they prepare the pharaohs, you know, when they pass away, the rituals that they perform, and what they expect the afterlife to be, Shafaz.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that history of the, you know, the pharaohs and the ultimate story of that pharaoh that chased Musa alayhi salam into the sea. His body is being preserved there in Egypt, in you know, right on the ground floor in the museum. Did you visit that that tomb of that pharaoh?
Yes, Shafaz, I was very fortunate to have traveled to Egypt before, and then we had a proper guide that was actually doing his master's in Egyptology, and he could take us through all these the museums and the temples, and even interpret the hieroglyphics and give us quite a deep insight into all the stories that went on in Egypt. This trip, it was just 3 days in Cairo, so we didn't tour too many of the museums, etc. But we did enjoy taking in the sights of the pyramids, the Sphinx, and it took some really creative photos there as well, Shafaz.
And Dawood says, Assalamu alaikum. What a fascinating chat with Adam Kamda. Chef, you bring radio live. Jazakallah khair for that. He asks you, how advanced are the boats in the River Nile there? Are they still the old Egyptian dhows sailing up and down? I mean, that's a very good question. How advanced is the boat? I mean, do they still have those, you know, those dhows they talk about? It's like, I think, a wooden boat with a sail, Adam.
Yes, Shafar, that wooden boat with a single huge sail, a short mast and a long boom, it's called a felucca, and they still are very active in the River Nile. The subsistence fishermen and farmers use them for modes of transport to transport goods and transport people across the Nile and up and down to various destinations. But it's also a big tourist attraction, Shafar. There's a felucca marina where the tourists can go down and enjoy an hour's sail or a two-hour sail at sunset. And that's very entertaining. And having said that, there are lots of modern boats. I've seen huge commercial vessels transporting building materials, transporting machinery up and down the Nile. And the Nile, you can liken to our major freeways, Shafaz. You know how you have trucks transporting goods up and down the country through our major routes. The Nile is used as a means of transport for transporting goods to various parts of Egypt, Shafaz.
Rashid says, on a lighter note, Chef, assalamu alaikum to Adam Kamda and you. I want to know, are Egyptians are better fishermen on land, and they are better than the sharks on land? How do you respond to Rashid there?
I think fishing was probably more popular in the olden days. I think the modern Egyptians are not really avid fishermen. Most of the fish they target from the River Nile are really tiny fish, similar to what you'd see in Egypt. You know, they catch those little fish that look like sardines, and it's really quite a delicacy. So that's what you would find the guys targeting mostly. But there is a huge fishery that caters to tourism, Shafaz. As I mentioned, the Nile perch is really a dream fish for every avid angler to try and aspire towards. It's like, you know, trying to get a billfish, like a marlin, under your belt. You know, you'd want to get a huge Nile perch, take a beautiful photo of it, and release it back into the water, Shafaz.
Yeah, I'm trying to read this Rashid guy. I think in between the lines, he's talking about, you know, when you watch all these travel shows and all that, most of them give Egypt a, you know, or the Egyptians a very negative story, saying that be careful, you know, they'll charge you treble this and they'll do this according to where you come from. If you've got dollars, they'll clean your dollars out and so forth. I mean, I'm sure if you go with a reputable company, you get saved from these sharks that wait for you on land, Adam.
Yes, Shafar, it's not just Egypt. You know, it's any foreign destination that you go to. If there are businesses that are catering for tourism or tourists, you know, things are priced in dollars and things are expensive. But that just comes with traveling, Shafar. We were so fortunate. I loaded the app InDriver on my phone and had a local SIM card. So I was able to call up a transport that was really cheap. And we found all the drivers that we had used were extremely friendly, extremely helpful, helped us to save money. There was one guy that even came to the old market with us, and he says, leave it to me. He'll speak in Arabic, and he'll get the local price, because if they see you're a tourist, you know, the prices will be higher. And that's normal in every country, Shafa. They're not out there to cheat you or rob you. That's just normal. They want dollars, and they take an extra margin when they are dealing with tourists. So we really had a fantastic experience traveling as locals with a local guide and enjoying the benefits of local prices as well, Chapat.
You know, I like what you said there, and it's not only Egypt, and because you get these slanted views there, perhaps we should have Adam Kamda doing a tourist program and say, you know, these are shortfalls, this will happen because people, you know, they need a little bit of bansera now and then. So Adam, I give you full marks. And in mitigation, what you said there, I mean, you won the case hands down. Now, looking at our part of the world, we started our program, you know, a few months ago talking about sardines, and there were shows coming in. Suddenly, the sardines are playing hide and seek. What's going on there, Adam?
Yes, Shafad. You know, sometimes when the netters say there's no sardines around, or they can't spot the sardines, it doesn't mean that they've disappeared or they've stopped moving. It's pretty much the case that they are far out to sea, out of reach of the netters, and that's why there's sometimes a lull in the hunting season. And also, weather plays a very strong factor. And we've had strong winds, heavy rains, rough seas. All of those things drive the sardines away. And when the rivers flow out, you get a lot of brown water along the coast, which keeps the sardines, you know, further out. So the weather had settled a bit over the last few days, and the sardines have moved closer. My good friend Ghulam Ishaq has been in touch with me almost on a daily basis, really excited that the sardines are closer again. And they have netted successfully over the last few days in various spots like Mtwalumi, Hibberdeen, Winkelspruit, and Scottsboro, Shafar.
Now, you know what? Adam, you won't believe this. While you're talking, my next question about to pose to you was about Ghulam. How do you read my mind, Adam? How did you read me? I don't know.
We're in tune, Shafad, so we think alike.
Hey, telepathy, yeah, brother. I'm not lying. Allah's my witness. I'm about to talk about Ghulam Bhai. What's he doing? He's in his dinghy. He's checking out for the sardine. Adam, you have to record him one day. You have to record his voice. You have to do maybe a 5-minute interview and play it on your segment here. You have to play it on your fishing segment. Now, I want to know about this mussel cracker. You know, they say this mussel cracker is a very important fish in that, you know, if you get the right mussel cracker, you can find a lot of pearls in it. How many pearls did you get thus far from a mussel cracker, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, pearls generally grow in oysters, but there is a type of a stone that you'd find in the mussel cracker, this huge mussel cracker. When you cut them up and dissect the stomach, you sometimes find something that looks like a pearl. I don't know exactly what it is. It's probably an old fish with gallstones, Shafad, and you are the surgeon removing those gallstones. So, having said that, talking about species of fish, when Ghulam was netting on the south coast, he mentioned that there was a huge kingfish landed by a young angler from the shore, and I've seen pictures of that on social media. And talking about various species of fish, I was fortunate to go out fishing on Friday morning with my friends Lionel and Skulk. And the two big fish that were hooked were taken by sharks. The one Lionel managed to get the head out was a big kingfish. Skulk's one was, he fought it for quite a few minutes and the line parted. But the highlight of the day, Shafad, was the variety of species that we caught. We must have caught about 15 different species on that just a few hours of fishing off the bluff on Friday morning, Shafad.
Alhamdulillah. All the other spots, Winkelspruit and Pennington, you know, is the South Coast a better fishing spot than the North Coast? I mean, South Coast versus the North Coast. What's your opinion, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, it varies according to the season. So sometimes, you know, you've got to travel really far south towards Margate and Port Shepstone to catch some decent fish. Sometimes when the northeaster blows for 3 days and then swings to a southwesterly, our Durban Basin, that's the Ushaka area, is very productive with flatfish and grey sharks, Shafad. And then there are other times where you have to travel as far as Gela in the north to catch certain species of fish. So we have a really productive coastline, and we're really blessed with a huge variety of species that we can catch throughout the year, Shafad, whether it's summer, winter, or any of the seasons in between.
Gee, Adam, you know, a very flowing conversation this morning, as usual. Maksud said, Assalamu alaikum. I'm really enjoying the rapport this morning. A lot of information is coming through. I want to know from Adam Kamda, when last he went to Mozambique, and is it safe to go and fish there? It used to be paradise for me. I went there when I was 35 years old. Now I'm 55. Hey, Adam, how you respond there to our group?
Yes, Shafad, Mozambique is such an amazing tropical destination to fish in. They've recently, within the last year or two, built tarred roads from our border all the way to the first town, which is Ponta do Ouro. For us, in our pioneering days, it used to be quite an adventure just to drive through those sand dunes with your bucky and your boat in tow to get over the dunes and get through all the soft sand and get to the destination. But now, you know, just with the ordinary bucky, you can drive all the way to Ponta do Ouro, although the coastal road in Ponta do Ouro is still soft sand, so I would recommend a 4x4 to get there. But the best spot we found in recent travels was the next town, which is Ponta Malangan. We had this amazing chalet all right on the top of the dune with fantastic views of the ocean. And there's a launch site there where you can launch your boat. The locals are all really helpful. But having said that, there is better fishing to be had if you make the effort to go to places like Inamban, Tofu Beach, Pindan, all those spots, Shafad. So Mozambique really has a lot to offer, and it just takes a little bit of effort to get there.
Alhamdulillah, and looking, a lot of questions coming through this morning. This is from Faisal. Faisal says, Assalamu alaikum. I like Adam, and I visit his shop quite often. But there is one question that's always bothering me. I should have asked him in the shop. I better ask on radio so the whole dunya can hear it. Adam, what is the lifespan of a boat, especially a fishing boat? Because so many olds are selling their old boat. I don't know whether to buy it or not. Adam, how you respond to our brother here?
Yes, Shafad, it's the same question as how long is a piece of string. You know, your boat can last you many decades if it's well looked after. For example, my boat that I use weekly, sometimes two or three times a week, lies on a mooring. Generally, when the boats are on the mooring, they decay a lot faster. So you need to have a coat of anti-fouling painted underneath. So my boat comes out every year to have it scrubbed and repainted with anti-fouling. So the hull is in perfect condition. The other major wearing part, Shafad, is your motors. And I think this is probably the third set of engines on my boat. And my boat is also already about 30 years old. But if you step on board, it's clean, neat, no smell. It's as if it's a new boat, Shafad. So it's pretty much how you maintain it and look after your boat that you can get a long life. I have a small yacht in the harbor as well, and that boat was built in 1980, which would make it like 43 years old, Shafad. But this also starts on the turn, sails really well. So most boats generally have very long lifespan. It's just the ones that are neglected. Motors run better if they run every week. If you only start your boat up every month or every two or three months, then you're going to find your motors becoming more and more sluggish, and you'll always have more and more things to fix on your boat, Shafad. So vessels in general run better if they are used more often, Shafad.
Yeah, you show a lot of TLC for your boats, and you really take good care. Like a car, the car that is parked indoors or has a garage will last much longer than the car that is exposed to all the elements. And, you know, when you wash it, you check the engine out, you take it for service, it will give you that optimum. But as you said, a boat that's parked in mooring, that's full-time on water, you have to, you know, clean it every year and so forth. What about those people that keep the boats in the yard, Adam? Should they have it sheltered? Some of them just leave it in the sun there. Those types of boats, they're exposed to the elements too, you know, when it's raining and so forth. Talk to us about that scenario.
Yes, Shafaz. The ideal is to keep it on a trailer in your yard, covered with a boat cover, or even better if you have a garage that you can park it in, so it's totally undercover. It's similar to looking after a car, Shafaz. First prize is to have your car inside the garage. Second prize, if it's outside, have a car cover over it so it's protected from the sun and the elements. And third prize is, you know, you're just using your car daily and parked outside all the time. You just gotta deal with the wear and tear, but maybe wash it regularly and treat it with good quality car care products, and you get a lot of life out of it. And it's similar with boats, Shafaz. Just understand what maintenance is needed and do it regularly and spend that extra money on the maintenance. It'll save you a lot of money in the long run, Shafaz.
Well, you Township Hyper and Motorsports. You know, I've been thinking maybe one evening I have to bring you on a motor show, because Adam, I mean, you're a master at it, isn't it?
Shafar, I'm blessed that I can. My career is, you know, I could follow my passions through my career. So I love everything to do with cars, and I love everything to do with boats and fishing and the ocean. So I'm pretty quite blessed that I interact with all my customers who have similar passions, and I can share it also through social media, through my photography, the photos of the sun coming up and conditions of the ocean. Whether it's for fishermen or kayakers or surfers, they all enjoy, you know, watching the nature photos and the photos of the Durban Beach Run, Shafaz.
Well, I know we can have a high-octane show with Adam. They also, the guy is brilliant on radio. Now, Adam, yeah, who? Okay, no, I will ask him. The Brew Day is asking me to tell you what's the recipe this morning. What you've got for us, Adam?
Yes, Shafaz, I thought since it's sardines are back in full swing, I've seen them on sale at most of the popular spots in Chatsworth. So I'm sure if you look around the corner at your local hotspot, you will find some sardines. So I'll just run through the basics of a very simple recipe to prepare your sardines. Start off with cleaning the fish. You scale them, usually with the nets. Most of the scales fall off, but just use the back end of your knife and scrape off any remaining scales. You can slit the belly and remove the inside and give it a thorough wash and let it drain. Then you prepare a flour mix. So you can take a half a cup of flour. And to this, you can keep it simple. Just add salt and pepper. Or you could add your normal curry spices, salt, chili powder, turmeric powder, dhania powder, and jeera powder. Mix that all together. And for an extra bit of pizzazz, add some garlic salt and some tartar spice. You mix this together, you dust all your sardines into the flour, shake the excess off and let it stand for a few minutes. Then you fry this in hot oil, about 3 to 4 minutes on each side. Don't move them around too much. Let them cook properly on one side and then turn them over once to the other side. And when you serve this, serve it hot and give it a good squeeze of fresh lemon juice over it, Shafaz.
Magic, that lemon juice, Adam. I mean, that lemon, you get a lot of fresh lemon, isn't it? You don't go for that plasticated lemon juice that you get.
Yes, Shafaz. Fresh is always best. So if the lemons are in season, give it a good squeeze of fresh lemon juice, Shafaz.
Well, help the people. Yeah, don't be a miser. Squeeze that lemon properly, people. Adam, I really enjoyed your chat this morning. I know over 2 million people heard you this morning. Your parting words before you go.
Yes, Shafaz. I just love to remind everyone to look out for the weather warnings. There's strong winds and big seas heading our way with very cold temperatures as well. So just be cautious if you're heading out to sea. Watch the weather carefully. And even on land, stay warm and take precautions if you are traveling. Thanks for a lovely show, Shafaz. Salams to you and the listeners.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.